This is EdTech Weekly. On today's show, Qualcomm is innovating education, Commodore's Amiga still have a purpose, and STEM programs might be shaping the future of education. Before we get to the news, Matt, I do have an announcement to make. Are you excited about this announcement?
I am.
I have decided that I will be giving you the Google Play gift card, the $15 gift card. All your dreams can now come true.
That's weird. I heard 50 before.
No, 15. Yeah, well, it was 50, but I spent $35. But it's still $15. I mean, that's good, right?
Well, we'll see. I think we're going to double or nothing.
No, you're going to double or nothing? So what are you saying? You want to wait and see if a listener actually emails and they'll get to $15, and if they don't, I have to get you a $30 card? Is that what we're saying?
Yes.
Oh, I don't like that. Yeah. Well, let's get to the news, Matt. First story today, Engadget reports about a school district using a peculiar piece of old technology to control its AC and heating for the entire district, an 80s-era Commodore Amiga computer. Matt, this has to make that geek heart of yours beat a little bit faster, does it not?
Yes, it's awesome.
My first computer was a Commodore 64, and I'm a little frightened that something from an era so long ago is controlling anything at all, let alone a heating and cooling for a school system. Matt, it connects using a modem. Is this whole thing brilliant or is it insane?
Well, it has to dial in to make changes, so I would assume that it's brilliant because it's not always connected. And if it is always connected, who is going to understand the architecture of a Commodore 64 to be able to make any changes?
Well, remember, this is an Amiga that we're talking about, so maybe the Amiga is more understood.
I don't know.
I don't think so either. But so you bring that up. Is the security angle here to consider? Is it more secure because of the fact that nobody's using this architecture anymore?
I would say that it probably is more secure for that fact, but it's also the heating and cooling. I mean, it's not like, hopefully it doesn't have a range where it can say, I would like you to turn the whole school district into Antarctica or Hades, you know? So any switches on that really are probably just going to be by 10, 15 degrees.
Yeah, you're going to make things uncomfortable that day. If it's a hot day, maybe, or something, you turn off the AC.
A pit may sweat.
Yeah, there may be some more pit sweat that day. But it certainly isn't something that's going to cause a lot of problems. You know, I find a few things interesting about this. Number one is, I'm assuming from the article, this is the original system. This is not like somebody decided, hey, let's use this old Amiga and try to figure out a way to use it. So it lasted a really long time, which is interesting because in this day and age, it doesn't seem like things last that long. My favorite parts of this article is that it has a radio in it or something that interferes with their walkie-talkies. I thought that's brilliant. The programmer who made this was actually a high school student at the time, and now he's basically the only one that knows how to do anything with it. And so he's kind of their only hope if something goes wrong, and he's now middle-aged, whatever that means. And it would cost a whopping $2 million to replace it.
That is job security right there.
Unbelievable. That Amiga, that thing's going to keep chugging along for a while. I don't know if they're going to come up with $2 million to replace it anytime super soon, but that's crazy. You know, someone in the comment section, Matt, mentioned Raspberry Pi. Those are those cheap sort of computers. I'm guessing that that's a little bit less than $2 million, and it may even have more processing power than the Amiga. I would think so, right? Should they just scrap it for Raspberry Pis?
No, unless this guy upsets somebody. I mean, he's clearly the best person to possibly run it. I mean, let's let the guy take it all the way to the grave. I mean, if it costs $2 million to replace it, if certain things started going, like a motherboard started going out and you had to replace piece by piece, yeah, they should probably spend the money to fix the infrastructure. But if everything's running right now, you have a safe, secure system that you have someone who is the most knowledgeable person on it. I mean, how many times do people call up asking to talk to tech support and they're like, I want somebody who knows more about it than you? You have the guy that wrote it.
Yeah, he's going to be the guy that you want to talk to. You know, I'm hoping that this podcast lasts a long time, and in 5 or 10 years, we're still doing this podcast, and we get to report on the story where the Amiga, the obituary for the Amiga, it passed away and it's done. But they might come up with funding in the meantime. We'll see. Our next story, Wired reports that Qualcomm taught 3,000 kids to build a robot in the last year. I know that I'm getting old and maybe a little out of touch, Matt, because when I first heard Qualcomm, all I thought was, well, you mean that company that used to make those kind of strange little cell phones? How are they a relevant company? And of course, Then I realized, oh yes, the Snapdragon processors that are in just about all Android devices, I believe. Yeah, they make those too.
Oh, they make so much stuff. Qualcomm makes a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and what they're doing, I think, is so, like, this is one of the coolest EdTech stories that I've seen in a long time, I think. They created what they call Thinkabit Labs. Okay, kind of cute name there, Thinkabit. They bring middle school students in and teach them about robotics, among some other things. And to me, I mean, if this were a part of my educational experience, I just think, how might things be different right now? Like, what would I be doing right now if I had been as a middle school student brought in and like shown, here's some of the jobs you can have and here's some of the cool ways to do it?
I would just be flexing my bionic arm.
With your mind.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Now, the cool thing about this, like I said, they're also telling students about the type of jobs that are available at their company, helping them get interested into the tech field. To me, I really kind of feel like this could be a transformation in education, right? Too often we have school situations and district situations where finances are handcuffing them and they just can't get things done the way they want to. What a better way than to have a business invest in their future, also in the education of these students. I mean, do you think this is a model that could be used to help transform education?
I think it's a model that could do a lot of good, but I also feel like there's slight harm that could happen with it. I'd rather see a bunch of companies all come together and come up with, you know, if Qualcomm worked together with several other companies and came in and taught maybe more things, maybe the conversation at the end shouldn't be, oh, look at all the jobs that are at Qualcomm. But I do think it's a great thing. I would just like to see more interaction between multiple companies working with a school district or multiple school districts, not just one company coming in.
Yeah, I don't know. I think at some point there needs to be some sort of value for them. And, I could see this being a scenario where several companies do this and, you know, a student could choose which companies they wanted to go on a field trip to go see things that they're interested in. So I'm not really sure I'm with you on the same page as that. I kind of feel like I see it at this stage of the game, what you're saying, like it's a little too specialized for just a couple of the big companies. But at the end of the day, like we talked about with video games, right? Anything that's going to get students interested in something that they didn't know about or something that might spark an interest to do something, I think it's a good thing. And it makes me excited about where the possibilities of business and education can work together to help out. I really believe that there's something in this. You know, they're even investing in multiple labs around the country, and they're even considering the infrastructure in terms of what are we going to do with the students once they learn how to do this stuff and how do they go there. So they're actually, you know, planning on training teachers as well. And as an educator, I would love the opportunity to learn more about this so that I could help students, you know, find a way through that.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great step in the right direction. I just become a bit more concerned about things like this when it comes to a company working and doing a thing and promoting a type of brand awareness. It really all depends. I mean, I don't know what all the stuff they're, all different things that they're working with. If everything's all built on a Qualcomm, I can understand it because they're the ones that are throwing the money into it. That's where I would like to see, you know, maybe Texas Instruments also, you know, maybe working together with them. You've got two chip manufacturers who are doing that stuff. Are they specifically working in one type of script? Are they, you know, all that jazz? But then again, this is also the beginning stages of something that could be absolutely amazing, and maybe all of those other things are going to, you know, fall into place.
Yeah, I mean, I think this kind of stemmed from the beginning of trying to get the minority populations, female and others, to be involved, and that's kind of where this came from. I think trying to get more people involved that may not normally be involved. So I think it's a good start, and I do think, you know, if certain companies like Google maybe did this, and they are doing this in some ways, they have their own projects that they're working on. I think depending on the company, you might have a different perspective too at what their motives are. But mm-hmm. I definitely think overall, I think this is a good step. And as long as, like you said, it doesn't become too unifocused on one company and others aren't involved and that kind of thing, I think it could be great.
Yeah.
All right, our next story, Matt, TechCrunch, and this follows along lines with the last story, reports that STEM programs are leveraging collaboration and coding to help create students who are more prepared and desirable entering into the job market, especially the tech market. It seems the inherent need for collaboration in a lot of these STEM programs is really helping students be better leaders and team members. Matt, this kind of reminds me a lot of hackerspace movements that are happening across the world and the country here, where collaboration is a huge part and great things kind of seem to be coming from this type of community-based collaboration. Do you think this is going to help steer education towards even more collaborative project-based learning than we have?
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like programs like this really do a great job of getting students involved in the community and working in a community aspect and learning how to learn together.
Yeah, I think the cool part about this too is something that I didn't really think about, but the more that people are involved in this project-based learning with, you know, the group structure, I really do think it helps promote better leaders as well, because a lot of times I think the stereotype of a leader is somebody who automatically takes control of everything. And I think in reality, as a business and as a company, what you really want is people that are leaders in a sense that they know what their role is and can step in when they need to. You know, I think this overbearing leader who tells everyone exactly how it goes is not sort of what, at least, you know, we're being told it happens in these tech companies. It seems like it's more of a collaborative effort. And I think to me, the sign of a good leader is somebody who knows what their place is in a group and knows how to make that group the best it can be.
Yeah. No, I mean, we have local groups here. The article itself talks about one in Ybor City. I think great things happen when, like, let's say you're in a coding camp or something like that, and you're trying to build an app, and, you know, you're really good at JavaScript, and somebody else is good at PHP, and, you know, all these different things are moving. Well, all of a sudden, there's a need for something else. It's that person who knows when they can step up and do it. They can lead by example by stepping into something, not necessarily telling everybody else what to do. So it's exactly as you say. This is people finding their places in a community. And this community just happens to be a hackerspace or a coding group. Finding your niche in there and working everything you can to make it a better community.
Yeah, and I think, you know, on a larger scale, if we do this at the classroom or the club level within a school, it's going to promote and foster that collaboration and community sense within the school itself. I think this is, you know, we ask this question a lot, Matt, and probably, you know, not deservedly so, but is this going to save education? And like you've said many times, I don't think there's one thing that's going to save it, but I think the process of what we're seeing here is probably closer than anything we've talked about so far. Would you agree?
Yeah, well, yes. And the reason I say that is because I guess the most valuable lesson out of something like this isn't necessarily, hey, I learned how to code. It's I learned how to be confident in myself and put myself out there with a group of people that are my peers, and I don't feel pressure, you know, from that. I step outside of my normal comfort zone, and I'm willing to work with a group of people. And I think that's part of education that needs to be there.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, more than anything else to me, this story and the Thinkabit Lab story from Qualcomm are really just helping students to see how things work in the real world. And in my experience in education, it really didn't have anything to do with the real world. I was in a lot of classes where we were lectured to and told to take notes, and then we had tests. And then it is so rare especially I think in the tech industry, but in any business that you want to really work in, for somebody to tell you, bark out every order and you just follow the exact instructions and spit back exactly what they're saying. That's not a good company. A good company is one where you are sort of guided in a direction and you and your team members help, you know, make that vision happen. And to me, at least it's given students a piece of that, which I know I didn't have in my education. So I think this is a great thing. And I think it's, if it catches on more, and I think it will, because just of how useful that scenario is. I mean, you really want students to be working together and you want to be creating that sort of collaboration on a daily basis. So I like it, Matt. And I think that has a really good chance of sort of shaping, you know, the future of education, if you will. All right. For our tip of the day, Matt, today we're going to talk about our show a little bit. We want to make sure that we are gaining listeners. Every week we seem to get a few more listeners on the podcast. We haven't had any interactions yet. We want to foster that because we really want to make the show the best it can possibly be. So we're going to give you a couple ways to reach us. On our website, it's edtechweeklyshow.com, edtechweeklyshow.com. You can go on that. On that front page, first of all, you're going to see the posts of all the podcasts, and they'll have all the show links in there. But also on the right-hand side, you can put your email in there, and we'll automatically email you those stories once a week. And then that way, if you don't have time to catch up with the podcast, or you don't, you know, it comes right to you, and you can just kind of click on the links from there so you can do your own browsing. We mentioned Reddit last week. Go to Reddit, and then it's r/EdTechWeekly. You're going to see also the posts for the weekly podcast that we put up there. But we encourage you, jump in there and post some stories. Let us know some things that you want us to talk about. Put some comments in there. We'll definitely use them for the show. You can follow the show on Twitter, and that's at edtech_weekly. And that is just beginning, so we'll have some more content coming through there as well. And then always, you can just email directly to the show at edtechweekly@gmail.com. So that's another way you can reach us. We really want to have that, right, Matt? I mean, we're looking for some sort of connection. We know there's some people listening, but we really want to develop this show and make it as useful as possible for you guys. Any words of encouragement, Matt, to get anyone to help interact with the show?
First person to write in gets an Android gift card.
And a personalized, one-of-a-kind original song from Matt himself.
I'm not saying that I invented power ballads.
But are you saying anything about them or no? You perfected them maybe, or?
Nope.
Just going to say
nothing more.
You're leaving it there. Okay. All right. Huh? Well, some of our future plans, we would love to have some listeners involved with the show. Matt actually comes in on Skype for the show, so it's very easily done. If someone wants to get involved, even if they just want to talk about a subject, you know, email me, let me know, and we can get you on. I'm all about just kind of fostering that community and having everyone be involved if they want. I'd like to set up, Matt, and maybe you could help me with this. I'd like to set up like a voicemail type of a system where they could call on the show and we could record it and play some use listener opinions as well on the show. Is that something we could do?
Easy peasy.
Easy peasy. I love it. And then I'm working on a couple guest co-hosts who are in the ed tech community, people that can join Matt and I as we talk, or even if Matt's too busy or if I'm too busy and we need a replacement host, we can kind of work that as well so that we can make sure that the show is happening every week. And the plan is to get it out on Sunday. So Monday morning on the way to work, listen to the podcast, hear about what happened in EdTech news. Maybe it inspires you. Maybe it makes you think about something that you can do to help change what's going on in education in your area. Matt, we're done. Another show is wrapped up. This is our 9th episode, believe it or not. We're a train that cannot be stopped.
Well, we could, but we're not running out of coal anytime soon.
That's right. We have a surplus of coal. Thanks for joining us on EdTech Weekly. We'll see you again next week.
Later, folks.